Hey everyone, this is Jason Ferlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal, and yes, I have a cold. Apologies for my funny-sounding voice. This is the Fretboard Journal 79th podcast, and this time around I am talking to Dana Bourgeois, not about Bourgeois guitars, but about something very cool that he's doing in the first couple of weeks of December 2014. He's going to be auctioning off a guitar with the proceeds going to Tony Rice, and I thought I'd give him a call and talk to him about that. Over the years, Dana's obviously been very inspired by the modern tradition of guitar making, but has never succumbed to doing the enlarged sound hole Clarence White Tony Rice style model. He's finally doing a one-off, and it's for a good cause. So I wanted to talk to him about the work that went into it, the influence that Tony had on his career, and a lot more. I've got to say, I also tried to reach out to Phil Elliott of Elliott Capos because they are right now doing a Tony Rice signature model capo, another limited edition thing that you can order off of the Elliott Capos website, based off the original McKinney prototype that Tony has and hand-shaped and bent and uses every day. And you can order those. And Phil Elliott, to his credit, said, "I'm a capo maker, not a PR guy." So he didn't want to be on this week's podcast. But we do encourage you to go check those out. They are very cool capos. And proceeds of those go to Tony as well. Before I get to Dana, Fretboard Journal 33, we are now mailing. If you're into guitars, if you're into the music of Tony Rice, if you're into guys like Dana, who are building some of the greatest instruments ever made, we know you would love the Fretboard Journal, and subscriptions are just $40 a year, and make for a great gift. So, without further ado, here's Dana Bourgeois. Thanks for listening. Dana, thank you so much for talking to me, and there's a million things we could be talking about. I'm sure you're working on some amazing instruments for the 2015 NAMM show. But what I really want to talk to you about is this Tony Rice tribute guitar that you've been working on, and kind of get the backstory on that and kind of hear how that came about.
Oh, how did it come about? Well, I mean, you know, back a year ago this fall, when Tony won that Lifetime Achievement Award at IBMA, shortly thereafter, you know, there's an article in New York Times. It was pretty well publicized that, you know, he was having difficulty performing. And right around that time, the Tony Rice Foundation thing kind of sprang up, basically saying, you know, we're funneling donations to Tony. He's having a hard time performing. You know, he's not, obviously not making new records. Probably the royalty stream is drying up. He's having a hard time supporting himself. You know, kind of like an aging ball player. You know, the new guys make a lot of money, but the old timers don't, you know. So at any rate, I had the idea kind of way back then that, gee, he was, you know, maybe we could someday, you know, make a guitar and auction it off, and kind of never get around to it. You know, for the last 30 years, I've gotten requests for large sound hole guitars.
I was going to ask you about that.
You know, and I've always figured, well, you know, that's something I don't need to do. But I think so there was a sort of resurgence of requests, you know, for large sound hole guitars, probably just because, you know, Tony kind of hasn't been in the news a lot lately. But, you know, a little bit over a year ago, there was that big cluster of news, and people started hearing about him again, and, you know, maybe that's where the interest came. But at any rate, I just came up with the idea of, hey, let's make some kind of a replica of Tony's guitar and auction it off, and donate the profits to the, I'm not sure if it's going to go to the Tony Rice Foundation or Tony, or how we're going to do it, but, you know, get him to Tony.
Yeah.
And so that's what we decided to do. I built a guitar which is kind of, you know, inspired by Tony's iconic guitar. You know, we've done a few things. You know, it's not a slavish copy. You know, we've done our own neck joint and that kind of thing. It has, you know, I can run down the details if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also curious, have you had much hands-on time with 58957, the original?
Oh, well, actually, yeah. So there's even a farther back story than that.
Okay.
Than what I just said. And maybe I'll just reel it back. Reel the story back a little bit farther and then before I reel it forward. That was, you know, back in the 80s, Tony worked out of Boston a lot when he was in the Northeast. His management was in Boston and, you know, Rounder Records was in Boston. And so I got to know him, you know, through friends. I did a lot of work in Boston. I mean, Boston was like better than Nashville, you know, for acoustic music back then. You know, there was just so much happening. And so I got to know him a little bit. And, you know, I started, you know, whenever he'd be up in the Northeast or anywhere where I could get to a show, I'd go to a show. And if I had a new guitar, I'd bring it along and show it to him and get his critique. And, you know, Sonny was always polite, but he was never really wild about my guitars, you know. It's like, you know, well, you know, it isn't quite right here, you know, listen to this. And I'll listen to him play mine and then he'd play his and it would sound like 100 times better, you know.
Yeah.
and then, you know, he'd tell me a little bit and I'd go back and, you know, 6 months later I'd make another one and show him and it'd be a little bit better, blah, blah, blah. And it was really nice that he let me, you know, that he'd spend a little time with me, let me get some hands on his guitar, et cetera. And so one day I had two guitars with me, one that I hadn't intended to show him. It was an OM. And he said, well, what's in that case? And I said, well, it's an OM. He said, well, can I see it? You know, just out of curiosity. So he played it for a few minutes. He said, this is it, man. He said, this is the sound. All you have to do is, like, blow it up into a bigger package. Sort of what he was, you know, so what he was after was a guitar that had balance and clarity. And I kind of got to realize just from watching him play that, you know, he was, I mean, you look at the wear on his fretboard and you know, he played every note on the fretboard, you know, like a good jazz player, you know, fancy flat pickers tend to do that.
Yeah.
And he didn't want a guitar that was bass heavy or, you know, or had a cloudy tone or had, you know, sort of back in the day, you know, back in the 80s, back in the 80s, you know, there were other scalloped braced guitars were coming in, and a lot of them, the tops were just too loose and mushy. And, they didn't have the clarity. They didn't have the balance. I guess that was kind of my reference for sound. But at any rate, he gave me something to work on. And then Tony kind of, you know, dropped out of sight for a while. He had trouble with his voice. I didn't see him for, you know, 10 years. But I kind of kept working on, you know, making my dreadnought sound like a big OM.
Mm-hmm.
And in the interim, you know, along came Brian Sutton and started playing my guitars and sort of, you know, roared onto the bluegrass scene at about the time that Tony dropped off. And, you know, kind of the rest, as they say, is history. That kind of helped launch my career. Kind of gave me some bluegrass credentials. And that's kind of been the mainstay of my business ever since. And I've been, you know, I've sort of been trying to get a more and more authentic vintage sound as the decades go by. You know, this whole, you know, the age tone, you know, torrified wood
sure.
technology has really taken it, you know, a quantum leap farther back. But at any rate, all of this kind of came together and I thought, well, they'll just make a guitar that kind of emulates Tony's. I'm sure he'd like this one. I don't know. You know, I don't know what he'd say about it if he played it, but he'd like it better than the ones that I showed him back in the 80s.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty sure.
Good.
Of.
Good. Well, let's talk a little Let's talk a little bit about the details because, you know, Tony's guitar from the fingerboard to the pickguard. I mean, it's so modified. The sound hole, obviously. When you were thinking about your sort of tribute inspired by guitar, what ended up in the finished product?
Well, the basic fundamental thing about the guitar that's different from, say, you know, a standard bourgeois style, you know, vintage dreadnought is the large sound hole. My rosette is a little bit different. You know, the story on Tony's large sound hole was that wood on the inner, you know, on the inside of the middle rosette ring was all chewed away. And at some point, either Clarence or someone before Clarence, you know, got out a penknife and cleaned it up to the outside sound hole. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, to the little sound hole ring. And so I started by, you know, my rosette diameter is a little bit different from a traditional Martin. But I went to a traditional Martin diameter, and I opened the sound hole up right to the edge of the inner ring. And I added an extra fret to the fretboard and bound it. And it had a little bit different, I had to have a different size kick guard than what I used, but that was the main thing. That was the main modification. I didn't change the scale length. I guess there's a story that the fretboard on Tony's guitar, and maybe probably the bridge placement or something, is a little bit different than the standard, you know, 25.4-inch scale. But I stayed with my standard 25.5. I use traditional, you know, bracing, forward X bracing, which I use on all my guitars. The thing that I actually did to help balance the sound of the sound of my dreadnoughts was to only scallop the bass side. I never scalloped the treble side. This guitar, I've gone to a full scallop. This particular guitar is a, you know, just a very close, you know, very very as close as I'm going to get, you know, to a mid 30s, you know, dreadnought bracing. Mm-hmm. I've used torified Adirondack top, torified Adirondack braces, you know, very thin finish on the top, almost no finish on the top, really, just enough to protect it. Mm-hmm. And back and sides were fairly thin, but not crazy thin. Brazilian rosewood back and side. And otherwise, you know, traditional style belly bridge with a through bridge saddle. You know, Tony's, you know, Waverly tuners, nickel Waverly tuners with the round buttons like on Tony's guitar. And that's pretty much the package. It's a cool sounding guitar. We brought it to IBMA this year, and a bunch of people played it. Brian Sutton fell in love with it. Uh-huh. And, you know, just a whole bunch of players came by and tried it out, and everyone just thought it was a cool-looking, cool-sounding guitar. So the auction is going to go from somewhere around December 1 to December 15. And it'll be done online on our website.
And does Tony or does Pamela know about this?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any contact with Tony, but I've actually been in fairly close contact with Richard Hoover, mm-hmm. right from when I started thinking about this, too, because I just didn't want Richard to think that I was kind of like trying to poach, you know, an endorser,
sure.
or anything like that. And Richard has a direct line to Tony, and he said he would send him email, and he said, Tony might respond in a few months. So he's quite a recluse.
Yeah.
So last I heard from Richard, he's pretty sure Tony knows what's going on.
Yeah. Very cool. Was this Brazilian that you picked out, was that something you were sitting on for a while and for a special project, or did it just kind of come across your desk when you were working on this?
Yeah, I've got some pictures of Tony's guitar that were taken by Art Dudley.
Yeah.
who did the article on me.
Well, Art wrote not only about you, but wrote the cover story on Tony in the 5th Fretboard Journal many years ago.
Right. So anyhow, I started with photos that I obtained from him.
Okay.
That he took on that photo shoot. And I just tried to pick wood that kind of had the look. I didn't have anything that really looked like that straight grain, bland Brazilian. But I did have some sort of lightweight, straight-grained Brazilian rosewood that I'd sort of been setting aside for something nice.
Yeah.
And I used that. And I had a medium grain, Adirondack top, killer-sounding top. And so that was kind of the, I actually kind of went through the wood pile, the wood piles. I have stuff for regular building. Anything that I think is cool, I kind of set aside into another little area for special project things. And I went through everything, mm-hmm. To try to find stuff that kind of had the look. So, medium width, even grain on the top, and then kind of straight grain and not flashy looking, for the back.
Yeah. Well, Dana, thank you so much for your time. I know your announcement kind of came out around the same time that the Elliot Capo Tony Rice Signature Edition came out. So it's nice to see so many people pulling together for him, and I know we're all wishing him the best. Yeah.
Well, it was as I said, that one little offhanded statement that he made just had a huge impact on my career. This is the sound. The OM is the sound. All you have to do is put it in a bigger package.